Now, domestic abuse isn't a nice thing to talk about, and according to statistics, the one household in four experiences some kind of a domestic abuse. And it isn't just limited to women being the victims. It can also affect men and also occurs in same-sex relationships too. Now, the law was changed last year to make coercive control a criminal offence. Last week, I spoke to Miatta, who's a services manager for East Surrey Domestic Abuse Services, and I asked her what exactly is coercive control.
Coercive control is what we in this sector recognise as something that's present in every abusive relationship. It's a purposeful and knowing pattern of behaviour used by an abuser to break down their partner emotionally and psychologically in order that they can exert power and control over that victim. So it can be done in a variety of ways, isolating that person from their family or friends, monitoring their time, taking control of every aspect of their everyday life, such as who they can see, what they can wear, when they can sleep, repeatedly putting them down, and in some cases even forcing a victim to take part in criminal activities such as shoplifting, neglect or abuse of children, and then using that to prevent them from disclosing abuse to authorities.
This has been the basis for a long-term storyline on The Archers, which recently came to a head when Helen was acquitted on the charges of attempted murder and wounding with intent. Helen's defence put in a bad character application. What is this?
This is an application essentially asking the court's permission to introduce evidence of or disposition towards misconduct. So this can include convictions either within this country or outside this country. It can also include acquittals and reprehensible behaviour, so behaviour that would make the court more likely to be inclined to believe that this person has a disposition to commit the acts that they're being tried for.
This application led to Rob, the victim of the original charges, being cross-examined. Now, he claimed he was the victim, not the accused.
That's an attitude we come across on a regular basis from perpetrators of domestic abuse. They regularly try to take the victim role, and this is a pattern of manipulation that they will use within their relationships, but also with friends, family and professionals they're in contact with, trying to paint the victim or the survivor, as we call them, as the person who's questionable in terms of their character. And it could be that Rob, or the character, or character like Rob, might very well feel that he has certain entitlements within a relationship, and that includes the entitlement to have sex with his partner whenever he chooses to. And that again is an attitude that perpetrators will very often display, that sense of entitlement and ownership of the victim.
In a court case like this, it's who you believe as the jury, as they're often can often be very little evidence one way or another.
That's true. It's usually one person's version of events against the other. But in relation to coercive control, the Home Office, the Crown Prosecution Service and College of Policing have been quite prescriptive in their advice to the police in terms of the evidence that they collect to make the prosecution case as strong as possible. So the evidence that can be used in coercive control can include phone records, copies of emails, also medical records, testimony of friends or families or family members, given evidence about the effects or impact of isolation on the victim. The police are encouraged to also make local inquiries with neighbours, for example, regular deliveries, postal milk delivery, window cleaners. Any evidence that can be collected is crucial to prove that control within that household. Also, bank records are pulled on to show financial control, which often exists in these situations. Any previous threats towards children or family members to keep them away, if the victim has kept a diary, or just family and friends given evidence about how isolated that person is, how they've withdrawn from normal social activities, interests, hobbies. All of that goes to build a case of coercive control. So if the investigation is done very well, it can often be really powerful evidence to present to the court.
So are organisations such as yourself, ESDAS, are you obliged to provide evidence such as content of meetings, phone calls on the helpline, etc.? And if not, could this weaken a case?
Okay, well, if the victim is wanting us to release his or her records to the prosecution, then we absolutely will do so once we have edited all third-party information out of those records. But what we tend to do is to speak to the client first. For example, have they disclosed things to us that they haven't disclosed to the police? In that case, they should be aware that there could be an outcome they're not expecting or wanting as a result of those records being made public. But in terms of prosecution requests that are backed by our clients, we can absolutely produce those records. And the guidance I spoke about earlier recommends that the police contact agencies like ours, GPs, therapists, counsellors, mediators, to gather evidence that person might have disclosed to them to prove that coercive control has been taking place. If the Crown Prosecution Service doesn't have access to case notes of ourselves or other relevant agencies, of course it will significantly weaken the case that's presented in court, and then the jury has a more difficult decision to make in terms of the evidence presented to them.
So following Helen's claim under oath that she was raped by her abusive husband, can he be arrested and charged?
In theory, he could be arrested, but without a full statement from Helen, it's unlikely that there would be a successful outcome. In terms of charging, it would depend on her statement. And what we often find difficult is that, clients who are raped in an intimate relationship, they might have given consent on Friday to sex with their partner, and then on Saturday they're raped. In that case, the forensic evidence can't be relied on. And also with domestic abuse survivors, they have such a feeling of shame around sexual abuse within their relationship that a lot of the reports to the police tend to be historic. So, and again, the forensic evidence isn't there, and it's a one person's word against the other. Successful prosecutions for rape in this country are tragically low, but where there's been it's rape in an intimate relationship, it's even lower for just this evidential reason.
Child access is an important issue. Now, I've been using the recent Archer storyline as an example, and whilst Helen was acquitted of the charges against her, she still faced the child custody hearing. What happens in situations like this?
Well, in Helen's case, because of the law of child contact, her ordeal is very likely not over yet. Despite quite good guidances in place for the family courts, they tend to continue to push for contact with dads at all costs and portray a domestic abuse perpetrator as a good father in court. But what we do know is that the definition of harm to children states that witnessing or hearing the ill treatment of another within a domestic situation is emotional abuse. So if somebody is a perpetrator of domestic abuse, you would have to question whether they are also a good parent if they're allowing their children to be exposed to abuse. So this is why there's a campaign that's been going on, spearheaded by Women's Aid, and the campaign is called Child First, and it's based on a report that they've done based on the last 10 years, and they've done some looked into some cases of child homicides. So there have been 19 child homicides that have been covered in this report. So it's a tragic story of 19 children and 2 women in 12 families killed through unsafe court-ordered child contact. It's very frustrating for us within this sector, because 10 years ago Women's Aid produced a similar report of child murders, and nothing has changed in terms of the outcomes for families in the family courts. And now they've produced another report which shows other tragic outcomes for young children.
Last week, MPs debated research by Women's Aid. Now, their report reveals that between 2005 and 2015, 19 children in 12 families were killed by violent fathers who had been allowed to see them through formal and informal child contact arrangements. MPs called on the Justice Secretary, Liz Truss, to act swiftly to take deep-seated cultural attitudes among family court judges, which put the rights of abusive men over the safety of women and their children. Now, the debate focused on many personal stories of women who had been subjected to violence and coercive control by their partners, only to have to face them again in the family courts when the men fought for child contact. What I didn't realise was that the family court system allowed violent men to represent themselves by then re-traumatising their victims when they made their repeated and often spurious applications for access. Keir Starmer is the former Director of Public Prosecutions and Labour MP for Holborn and also St Pancras, and said that it was important to look at the changes made to the criminal justice system. Now, these changes provided better protection for these victims of domestic violence, including special measures for victims and witnesses as well, and the presence of independent abuse advocates. He asked why the family courts were not making similar changes. He said that there was growing evidence that perpetrators of domestic abuse were using the family courts to continue to harass and control their victim. Philip Lee is a parliamentary Under Secretary of State and for victims of youth and family justice, and said that the government was not complacent. I think it's fair to say the family court system can learn valuable lessons from the criminal justice system. So there you have it. If you know someone, or if you are a victim of domestic abuse, especially coercive control, don't suffer in silence. There is help out there for you. And I hope this morning has been helpful.